time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 655 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, Ernest P. Worrell is back in his very first graphic novel called Ernest and the Dreamstone. I talked with Corey Perkins, one of the creators of this graphic novel, about how it came to be and just who Ernest P. Worrell is and what we can expect for fans of Ernest and Jim Varney in the months ahead. Ernest's first comic is described this way. Get ready, for the first time in over 25 years, Ernest is back in action in a brand new spooky graphic novel sure to make you feel like a kid again. Ernest and the Dreamstone will be running on Kickstarter starting on September 17 and running for a month, so be sure to go and check out the website and the link that is in this episode's description today. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what Corey has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. Ernest and the Dreamstone is a fantastic, spooky, scary story perfect for the Halloween season. Over the last couple of years, the creators have pored over the story, making it as strong, on-brand, and earnesty as possible. Even the dialogue reads so that you can hear Ernest's voice on the page. And this is official, Vern. And I'm talking today with one of the creators, Corey Perkins, who has had a lot to do with it. How you doing, Corey?
I'm doing good, man. How you doing, Wayne?
I'm great, doing great as well. This is one of my favorite subjects, and I rarely get to talk with people about it, so I'm going to enjoy it. Now, one thing we need to point out, and people always get mad at me because I don't do this soon enough, is that the Kickstarter for Ernest and the Dreamstone is going to run from September 17 through October 17. So you're going to want to make sure that you keep track of that on Kickstarter, because we got to make sure that this baby hits the ground and goes running. So, Corey, right. why don't you talk about how you got involved with the book and Ernest and the whole business with Jim Varney? How did that happen with you?
Well, back in 1983 on a stormy night, I was that's when I was born. Yeah, that's a big question. How I got involved with Ernest? I mean, you know, I remember my first friend in preschool. He introduced me to Ernest Goes to Camp, and he told me, he was like, you know, but me and him were the, you know, ADHD kids that were running around and getting in trouble. And our parents were, I have good memories of this. Our parents were, you know, what are we going to do with these boys? And I remember he said, there's a movie, it's got turtle shell paratroopers. That's what he said. And he showed me. And then I watched a couple years later, Ernest Scared Stupid. And that's when it really, sank in. So I've been watching these films my whole life, and for a million reasons, I love them, you know, deep reasons, fun reasons, silly reasons. And, I actually got to meet, John Cherry, who was the, rest in peace, the creator of the Ernest character, and the director and writer of a lot of the Ernest films. You know, I mean, there was a bunch of writers, but he'd be like the head writer, right? Like, or he at least would write with the other writers. I don't want to discredit those people too. But anyway, I brought him in. I teach at a university, and I brought him into a classroom of mine on Zoom. And, you know, the class is called Globalization Through Film. But that, you know, I told the students I was going to talk about the globalization of Ernest. But let me tell you something. That had nothing to do with my course material. I just wanted to talk to John Cherry. And so, you know, it was just great. And at the end of that, I just said, hey, man, would you mind if I got, you know, worked on some Ernest fan fiction? And he was like, yeah, bro, go for it. Well, he didn't say bro, but he said, yeah, go for it. And little did we both know that that would be the start of something. And I did work on some fan fiction. Of course, I never showed anybody, you know, that was just something I did for fun. And then I wrote a graphic novel in the, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. It was a samurai story. Got it signed, but never reached the shelves. Wasn't quite a fan of the people that I was working with, and I'll just leave it at there. But so it never went anywhere, but it was a great experience for me. It got my confidence up on my writing abilities. And then, you know, I started meeting with Josh Cherry, that's John's son. And we just started talking, and I had an idea, and I had, you know, places I wanted to go, and I thought where we could take the Ernest character. And, you know, it's been over 25 years since Ernest has had an adventure, and I can't tell you how honored I am and amazed that I'm at the helm of a project like this. And so, yeah, I guess that's making a long story long.
Well, why don't you go ahead and tell us about Jim Varney's history, about how Ernest was developed and stuff like that, so we can get to the comic as far as the Kickstarter goes. How did Ernest get developed, and what kind of a career did Jim Varney have?
Ooh, yeah, that's a big question. Now, I will direct the listeners to a guy named Justin Lloyd. Justin is Jim Varney's nephew and his biographer. And Justin wrote a book called The Importance of Being Ernest, The Life and Actor of Jim Varney. And then he has a little funny tagline called The Stuff That Vern Doesn't Know. and this guy is the encyclopedia of everything Jim Varney. So if there's any hardcore Ernest fans out there, you'll have to, or if Justin's listening, you'll have to excuse me. I'm not as encyclopedic as Justin, but I'll do my best. You know, Jim was, you know, a dramatically trained actor from a young age. In high school, he was in theater and excelled and was winning awards. And he actually won the best actor in the state of Kentucky 2 years in a row. He started traveling around the Southeast doing plays. He went up to New York City. He went out to LA. He was on some television shows, but he just couldn't get the break that he was looking for. And so he moved back from LA, and actually it's kind of cinematic, because he, at one point, he just gave up. He's like, it was a writer's strike. He's like, I've tried enough. I have to take care of a family. I'm done. And then who calls him? John Cherry calls him from Cardin and Cherry, because they worked with him before, and Cardin and Cherry were working from an ad agency in Nashville, and they did just ads for every type of, you know, corporation and product you can imagine. And they had worked with Jim in the past, and they're like, and John knew, oh, this guy's brilliant. This guy has something special. And so the story is that there's a park in Texas. I can't remember what it's called, but it was in bad condition. And so they wanted someone to sell this park to the public, but they said, but John Cherry was like, yeah, but the park's in terrible condition. If we show it, people aren't going to want to go. So how are we going to sell something that looks terrible? So like, I got an idea. So, you know, the people in this ad agency created the idea of this know-it-all character named Ernest. He's like your next door neighbor, and he's got, you know, he knows everything that, you know, he's a know-it-all. He wants to get in your face, tell you everything. And so then he would just talk to the camera, which turned out to be Vern. And I actually think that happened for budgetary reasons. Like they didn't have the money, so they're like, let's just have, and it just struck gold. And then of course, without Jim Varney, it wouldn't have exploded. I mean, Jim Varney breathed the life into that character and ran with it in a way that's totally special and unique, that everyone knows. Everyone who's a fan of Ernest and Jim Varney knows that. So it was just, and John Cherry was also a really brilliant guy too. So it was just the right place, the right time, some brilliant minds, some creative people. And they made this commercial, and it blew up. And then so suddenly, all these other companies started calling across the country for Ernest, and then Ernest became a sensation. And I know, Wayne, you said that you saw some commercials in Florida, right?
Right, right. I'll get to that in a minute. Why don't you keep going with his career, and then I'll go back and tell that story.
Sure, yeah. So they start doing all these Ernest commercials. They blow up nationwide. And one of the genius things that Cardin and Cherry decided was that they wouldn't do national commercials. So they made probably thousands of those commercials all across America, but only in local markets on television. And the reason why was because People in local areas thought that Ernest was from their area. In fact, you still hear that today. Like, oh yeah, I know someone who, you know, that told me that Ernest is from our town and he used to do spots from our place, but actually they were all filmed in Nashville. And so they kind of kept that quiet, you know, because it worked so well. And then there was a parade somewhere. I can't remember the details somewhere. It was at a car race, like the Indy 500 or something like that. And they had a parade. And guess who was there with Ernest? Mickey Mouse and the CEO of Disney. And so they had a little parade. And when Disney marched, there was an applause. Yeah, Disney, you know, Mickey Mouse. And then Ernest came out and the crowd went crazy. And so they were cheering more for Ernest than for Mickey Mouse. And so the CEO of Disney was like, yeah, we need to sign that guy. And, you know. They signed him to a 3-movie deal. Now there's 4 Ernest movies, but they originally was a 3-movie deal. And I mean, how many, by the way, and this is a rhetorical question for all the listeners out there, but how many commercial characters do you know that became the star of a Disney film, right? That's like only one, Ernest. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how special of a talent Jim Varney was and how special Ernest was as well as a character. And then the movies were born, and I'll stop talking there because I don't want to blab too long.
Oh no, because he did the movies, and I was saying I was telling you before we started recording, he was there was an NBC show that created a character just for Jim Varney to play on the show, and unfortunately that was around the time that he passed, which was sad. I was so sick. Yeah. When I saw that, when I read that he had passed, I was so sorry. Now, my introduction, because I'm older, of course, I was a lot earlier than that. I was living in the Central Florida area, which is where I still live today. But what happened was interesting, was I, at that time, was working in an emergency room at a hospital. And I would work during the day, and I would go home and collapse in front of the television so I could relax.
Yeah.
I Channel 35 used to run Star Trek The Next Generation, like 6 o'clock every night. And so I was home, and I was particularly exhausted, and I was sitting down. I was watching television. And all of a sudden, in the middle of this Next Generation episode, there's a car driving up to a house. And, you know, the car kind of stops because – out of the bushes runs this guy with a baseball cap and a jean jacket on. And he comes running up to us and he says, "Where you been, Vern?" I remember most of it because it just startled me so much. He said, "Where you been, Vern? You've been missing all the action on TV 35. I mean, they got your drama." And he goes like, "Oh, Martha." And then he says, "And they got your comedy." And he does like a Porky Pig, dee-ba-dee-ba-dee. And he goes on to a whole bunch of stuff. He says, "You better get in there, start watching TV 35. And he puts his arms out and he runs back into the bushes. And I remember sitting there going, What in the world was that?
Right.
And I went to work the next day and everybody is saying, "Who was that guy on Channel 35 last night?" I mean, never seen Chris. This is pre-internet, pre-VCR days. So we, you know, all we could do was turn on 35 in hopes of seeing the commercial again. And I remember I saw that commercial a couple of times. And then there was a second commercial that came on. Yeah, and we're always Vern, you know. So the light, there's a light by a bed, and it turns on, and there is Ernest standing over us, looking down at us in the bed.
Yeah,
he says, "Vern, what are you sleeping for? You're missing all the good shows on TV 35." And he does the whole, you know, thing again, and then he gets to the, he's just about to turn, the camera actually turns away from Ernest, and obviously he says, "By the way, Vern," he looks and he goes, "I like the little bear," and he has this evil sort of ha 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 kind of thing that he does, and the light goes off. He turns the light off. So the last thing, those commercials just surprised everybody. Was talking about them, you know, because usually commercials are who cares, you know, it just goes on there. But these commercials had everybody talking, and everybody was watching to see what this guy did next. It was funny. I was living in Central Florida, but I'm from northeastern Pennsylvania. So I went up to visit, and what was on one of the channels up there, but there is Ernest selling Green's ice cream. And I went, "What? How could this guy's down in doing advertising TV 35 down in the Orlando area?
Right.
How can he be up here doing ice cream?" And You know, later on, I came to find there was a cassette tape that had a lot of his commercials on it, including a bunch of the outtakes. And the one outtake that got me, that killed me so much, you know, that business, we were talking before, that they have a gag with the windows and stuff like that that they
right.
did.
Right.
And there's this one time he's there and he's got his hands in there, you know, the window's supposed to slam down on his hands, he's going to go, ow. But instead, it's like slowly going down inch by inch. And he's going, and there is Ernest going, oh, no, don't bother. There's no reason to continue. It's over. Just forget it. And the window slowly goes down. And finally, it lands on his hands. And Ernest looks straight into the camera and goes in a very low tone, ow. I busted out laughing when I saw that. Oh,
I haven't seen that one. That's great.
And this is the thing. And when the movie started coming out, I started going to movies. You know, I take my brother because I wanted to see it. I don't care. I watched, I think, the first three. I don't think I saw the last one yet. I got to track that one down. And recently I rewatched the Christmas one. Now, the Christmas one is filmed in Central Florida.
Yeah, Orlando. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and I was up, and the funny thing was I had moved out of the area and I was up in Maryland at the time, and I'm sitting in the theater going, hey, I know that area. I've driven that road. I've seen that stuff, you know, because this beer was very Florida-like, you know, all the lights up all over the place and stuff like that. And I, like I said, I wrote a column about this because when I heard about the comet coming, I had to talk about it and try to promote it because I really am looking forward to it. And I talked about the fact that he's childlike instead of childish. And the other interesting thing to me is that I normally don't like a lot of silly. But with his, I just – the way that he does it, it just works for me. And it makes me laugh right out loud so many times. It can be as silly as it wants. You know, there's the reindeer on the roof of the room.
Yeah.
And I'm busting out laughing. I thought this was just such a great, great, great thing. Everything he did, I got a huge kick. Even when he played the bad guy in one of the movies, I was fascinated because I didn't know he could play a bad guy. And so there he was, you know, not only he's the good guy, but he's also the bad guy and stuff. I try to remember what the name of the last one was. I don't think I saw the last one.
Scared Stupid.
Is that the last one?
Well, it's not. It was the last of the Disney movies, if that's what you mean. There were about 9 movies total, so there were 4 to Disney, and then there were about 5 indie films. The very last one they did, I think, was Ernest in the Army. That was like in 1998 or 7. It was when he was getting sick, actually. But the last ones of the theatrical releases that you're probably referring to is Ernest Scared Stupid, Halloween version.
Yeah, I saw those, but the one in the Army I have not seen. So I've got to find out some way. I'm sure with streaming being a big deal these days, if I dig around, I'll find it. Because I'd love – there's Ernest I haven't seen before. I want to see it. If I could get a copy of that tape with all the commercials on it, I would love to have that because that made me howl by the day. I just, you know.
So for you and all those other people, you've said so much. I have so many things to say. I'm going to try to remember. For that reel of commercials, you just search Ernest Greatest Hits Volume 1, Ernest Greatest Hits Volume 2 on YouTube, and you'll find it. And it's brilliant. I mean, there's a billion of those things. And so that's what you saw. And those now are on YouTube. And I saw them first because they were at the end of, like, you know, some DVD I bought with a bunch of compilation of Ernest movies. So yeah, you can get out for you and all the listeners, just get on YouTube, search it. Also, I kind of wanted to say when you brought up Ernest Goes to Jail and him doing the villain, I believe that was probably a pretty big deal to Jim Varney at the time because, you know, he really wanted to do more dramatic acting. And it was kind of ironic that he blew up as this very silly character. But that movie allowed him to play a villain and show his versatility more in Hollywood, which is really important because he was worried about being typecasted. So it's cool that you had a reaction to that. And I think that he was probably pretty happy to have that role.
Well, he did several characters. He played a woman, an older woman with a neck brace on.
Yeah,
I can't remember the name of that. What was the name?
Auntie Nelda, okay. Yeah.
Because I, when he played these various characters, you know, it was fun for me to see him do the different roles and things like that. Because, you know, if somebody can make me enjoy silly the way that he did, then I want to see the other stuff he does, because that's how I knew he was on this NBC show, because I read somewhere that he was on this thing. And I watched that show until it went off the air because I wanted to see Jim Varney do another role. And it was a very different role from Ernest and stuff like that. But
sure. I think that Ernest Scared Stupid, now that one is my favorite. Now, one cool thing about the Ernest movies is that everybody has a different favorite. But I think Ernest Scared Stupid is the best movie. And I also personally, in my personal opinion, but I think it's Jim Varney's best portrayal of Ernest. Like if you watch them all in order, when he gets to Ernest Scared Stupid, I mean, he's just firing on all cylinders. And it's really a shame to me that Disney didn't renew them. So they gave him a contract for 3 films. Then they signed him again for 3 more. And Ernest Scared Stupid was the first one of those 3. And there should have been 2 that followed. And there's some, stories, won't go into all that, but as to why Disney canceled the contract right then. But in my mind, I whenever I watch that, I'm like, oh my God, I wish I could have seen more, because the cinematography, the writing, the cutscenes, the creativity, Jim Varney's performance, all of it was just like, oh, we figured out how to unlock Ernest. And it's wild, but it's great. There's pathos. It's hilarious. There's so many jokes. So anyway, I recommend, if you haven't seen it, checking out Ernest Scared Stupid. It's really great. And Halloween season is around the corner too. So perfect.
Yeah. Well, my favorite of his movies was the Christmas one.
Yeah.
That was the first one I saw. And like I said, being familiar with where it was shot and stuff like that, that meant a lot to me. But I'm also a big Christmas guy. And so to have a Christmas movie like that, and it being, again, very earnest in the sense that, he's there trying to help Santa Claus, and he's trying to make things happen. And he's got even sillier people than him around him, which was the funny stuff with the reindeer and all that stuff.
Chuck and Bobby. Yeah.
I just loved it. I even during the Christmas time, I'm very tempted many times. If I get a couple hours, I got to go watch that, see that movie again. Yeah. It's such a great, such a good thing. And of course, the whole story with Santa Claus is great stuff for me. So
yeah, anyway, I love it. It's great.
Yeah. It's all this kind of stuff that he's done. This is the interesting thing to me, but that's true about comics, is that nostalgia sells in comics. I mean, right now we're going through an age where all these cartoons that showed up in the 60s are now getting their own comic series. Space Ghost, the Herculoids are coming, all these things that I watched when I was a kid in the 60s. And so for me, I mean, a lot of people say, well, why do they want to bring back something that's 25, 30 years old? Well, because there's a fond affection for these things, because when I was, all these things happened and I got attached to the character, and I didn't get nearly enough to satisfy me. So when I heard this comic was coming, I was extremely happy about it, because I said, oh man, especially if you can always tell when the writing is really good, when you hear the voice of the actor in the dialogue.
Right. And now I appreciate you saying that, because that was really important to me. Now, I wrote this originally as a screenplay, and it's just for a number of reasons. It's just more compelling if you want to show it to somebody as a literary read. A comic strip is not quite as compelling. It's more functional. The illustrator's going to read it, but a screenplay reads more dramatically. And so I wanted to make sure all the dialogue that I wrote on the page had the same rhythm as Ernest, and delivered the same way that Ernest did. And all those characters that that are in those films, and especially Jim Varney's characters, by the way, they are long form comedy, and Ernest had these long, crazy, flowery soliloquies. Go back and check out, if you check out Ernest Scared Stupid, he's got these long, flowery, monologues. And well, how do you do that in a comic? And so that's something that I'm doing that, a lot of comic fans might be like, oh, don't do that, he's breaking the rules. But I know that in comic and graphic novel form, what you're supposed to do is cut down the dialogue as much as possible to allow the images to speak, but that's not Ernest. And I know that also you could have, if you really wanted to, you could break up the panels for each little line, but then your graphic novel is going to be like 500 pages. So I actually read a graphic novel called Monstrous You know, have you ever read Monster S. Wayne?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Brilliant. Mm-hmm. And I learned how we can put Ernest on the page and have him sound like Ernest and speak like Ernest and not sacrifice his rhythm by reading Monstrous, because Monstrous shrinks the font a little bit. They push the art out a little more to the bleeds, and they allow the room for the dialogue, and it doesn't disrupt the art. And the art's gorgeous in that graphic novel, by the way. Mm-hmm. And so it was important to me that Ernest fans will read that and hear Ernest vocal rhythm. And so that is not sacrificed. So you're going to see dialogue bubbles with a little more information on them. You know, when I have space to play around, I'll make more panels instead, you know, but sometimes you're going to have bubbles that are a little bigger. But that's how Jim Varney spoke, and that's how Ernest spoke. And that was really important to me. So I felt grateful that I was in the position to put my foot down to make sure that no, we don't sacrifice that.
That's good, because believe me, if we can hear the voice and we get drawn into what's going on, we'll be lost in it and we won't care how long it goes.
Right.
That's the good thing about it. So I'm good about that. Now, what interests me is, you know, of course, you came late to it after I did, but of course, there's all kinds of people coming in all kinds of times as far as Ernest and stuff goes. What was it that made you switch? You were talking about doing a film or something, or a dramatic reading or something. What made you decide to go to a comic?
Well, the original idea was always to, you know, to bring a graphic novel to Ernest. I just originally wrote it in screenplay form because it's a more compelling read to, you know, when we were having discussions, when I was talking with the owner of the franchise and so on and so forth, it's easier to say, hey, check out the script and work on it together. And then we readapted it back into comic book form. But the idea was always to create a comic book. Why? I mean, I guess it just makes sense, you know, like, you know, Jim's gone. So it's hard. You're hard pressed to make a film. You have to overcome the, who's going to play Ernest thing. And so, you know, that's a conversation that's difficult. And I think that's why they didn't do anything with Ernest for a long time. But with a comic book, you can project, you know, you can project all those voices and memories straight onto the page, and you can let your imagination fill in the rest. And I think it's the perfect medium for Ernest. And, Ernest is also kind of cartoon-like. Now, if you, go back for all the listeners and Wayne and everybody out there, if you watch Ernest Goes to Camp and then Ernest Saves Christmas and then Ernest Goes to Jail and Ernest Scared Stupid, one of the things you'll notice is throughout the films, Ernest becomes more cartoon-like. Like in Ernest Goes to Camp, you feel he's a real human being, and there's actually a lot of pathos and drama in that one. By the time you get to Ernest Scared Stupid, he's more of a Looney Tune. Like, you know, it's like a Looney Tune. He could fall off the cliff like Wile E. Coyote and die like 5 times, but he just keeps running around, you know? He would just have some black tar if he got an explosion. So it kind of works. And he, you know, Jim, when he played Ernest and when John Cherry and the writers wrote Ernest, I think they got a lot of inspiration from Looney Tunes, and they got inspiration from these all cartoons. And so it's chock full of that. So it just kind of makes sense. And I love comic books, you know, I love graphic novels. I've been reading them my whole life. You know, I'm probably not as hardcore as, you are, or some people listening to this. But I've been reading, I got a huge stack of them, and I've been reading them my whole life, and I just thought it worked perfectly. And, you know, if I can keep blabbing for 1 second,
sure.
Another reason why I thought it worked was because I actually compiled this massive compendium of Ernest facial expressions. Now, when I say that, I'm gonna be careful there. Ernest facial expressions. Now, why am I putting an emphasis on that? Because this is how brilliant Jim Varney was, right? So I have this folder. It's got like 20 different expressions. Sad, nervous, happy and nervous, happy and sad. You know, like, and there's all these expressions that Jim did for Ernest. And so if you are an Ernest fan, you know that his facial expressions are a massive part of the character. And if you don't have that in the comic book, it's not gonna be right. And so in this comic script, I pasted. I mean, this took me forever. I had thousands of these stills saved, and then I would paste them into the script so the illustrator would have an idea of where to go to make sure he was going for those expressions and the panels, because it was really important for me that it felt as authentic as possible. So I'm really excited that it will feel authentic. Now, when I was going back to talking about Ernest, the reason I was, you know, nerding out on that and getting excited is because if you watch Ernest Goes to Jail, the one you're talking about earlier, where he plays the villain, it's so amazing to watch Jim Varney's performance, because he at some point is wearing Ernest clothes. He's got the ball cap on. He's got the denim vest on. So imagine the same actor is wearing the same outfit, but yet based on his tonality, based on his facial expressions, you always know who is who. How genius is that? Like, how genius is Jim Varney to be able to completely embody different people's expressions with the same outfit on? So that's something I learned in this process. Like, oh my gosh, this guy was genius. It really gave me a better appreciation for it in the process. So yeah.
Well, he had a way to go over the top, but it worked. There's one expression I always remember. When he smiles, he gives you this great big toothy grin.
Yeah, yeah.
With the and the eyes looking straight at you and stuff like that. And that always made me laugh out loud because, you know, it's you know, because we're so used to understating things. Actors want to understate and do it subtly. He was over the top with all this stuff. You know, when he moved, he didn't just turn to the left. His whole body kind of caricatured and moved to the left in a different way. But that was fun because he was a contrast to what we're used to seeing. And he knew how to make all that stuff work so well. And it was just, he used to kill me.
Well, that's actually the dramatically trained actor coming out. Because if you're on a stage, you have to move your body and facial expressions bigger for the audience to know what you feel and or what you're, you know, expressing. And you have to turn your body in certain poses. And, you know, I'm not an actress. I don't know what they're called. But and so a lot of people, and I get really protective and defensive over Ernest, you know, because I love the character so much. And a lot of people be like, oh, Ernest, he's just some bumbling idiot. No. You know, it go put on a denim vest and a khaki hat and look in the mirror and try to imitate Ernest. It does not look the same, I promise you. And so it took a massively trained, highbrow, big expression actor to embody Ernest. So when people talk about like, oh, you know, what Ernest is this and that, like, no, you have to understand there was a guy with a lot of like intention behind that character and physicality, almost Jim Carrey with his facial expressions and stuff. So you're right to have noticed that. And so, I mean, again, I can talk about this forever. I mean, the performances to me are fantastic. What a lot of people think are this bumbling, lowbrow idiot. No, there's actually some genius performances behind that, you know?
Oh, absolutely. It works. That was the thing for me. It works. And like I said, my silly quotient gets filled pretty quickly most of the time, but not with him. I mean, I can sit there and watch him by the hour because I enjoy the way he does it. Now, my understanding is you've been working with one of Jim Varney's relatives with this project and others.
So yeah, so well, the owner of the franchise is Josh Cherry. They you know, the Cherry family owns Ernest's character, like Cardin and Cherry. But yeah, I'm friends with Jim Varney's nephew, who's Jim Varney's biographer, and he's really excited about this project. You know, Justin is the guy who wrote The Importance of Being Ernest, the book I mentioned earlier. And he's so kind and so giving and so supportive. You know, he's like helping us advertise. If you look at our trailer online, he volunteered to jump on there and co-sign this project because he's so excited about it. And it just made me feel so grateful to have his blessing and his Jim Varney's niece, Andrea, as well. I mean, these people have kind of amazed me with how kind and caring and giving they are. I'm happy to say that over and over again because they deserve it for sure.
Well, it always interests me because, you know, sometimes relatives kind of poo-poo. Oh, yeah, that's just my relative. Oh, no big deal. But every once in a while you come across a family that says, you know, we really do appreciate what that person did. And how it impacted our family and the difference it made in people's lives. Because, you know, there's always going to be people running up to him and maybe to you too when this book comes out about saying what a difference that Ernest made as far as, you know, their appreciation of comedy and the lighter tone and how it was just at the right time kind of stuff. So I'm hoping that's the case, because I always want to run up and say, oh, I really love that. That was really good the way you did that. And whenever, that's with books and stuff. If I meet a creator, I rush right up to them and tell them how much I enjoy it, because, you know, especially working in comics, and you know this by now, is that comics can be a very solitary experience.
Yeah.
You're writing, and there's artist work and stuff like, but you're not dealing with the public, really. It's not until the book comes out and then you start getting feedback that you really know that it was worth all that time that you spent working on it. So I'm hoping that this does a lot to revive all that. I was reading someplace where there was an actor who did an imitation of Ernest's voice in like a cartoon or something I was reading about. So I don't know if that's... Yeah.
I don't know the background on that, actually. Yeah, there was an actor who did, Jim Varney did Slinky Dog in Toy Story, and so there's a voice actor there, and there's a voice actor that I guess did an Ernest commercial in around the year 2005, but I actually have never seen that. So I don't know the voice actor that's being referred to there, but yeah. But in this graphic novel, I didn't want to just, I definitely borrowed from the Ernest movies for sure, because you want it to match the vibe. But also, when I wrote it as a screenplay, I didn't want to just write something that was derivative. I wanted to take Ernest in a new direction. And so if anybody goes back and watches Ernest Goes to Camp, one thing that you'll find is that there's some pathos in that movie. It's definitely a funny, zany comedy that'll make you laugh out loud, no doubt. So don't get it twisted, but it's kind of a dramedy, and it's surprising. People are like, dramedy for Ernest? Yeah, go watch Ernest Goes to Camp. And there's a scene where Ernest sings "Gee, I'm Glad It's Raining." He's sad about stuff that's going on, and Jim Varney sings. It's the only time they ever did sings a song in the middle of the film, and it's brilliant, and it makes people emote. And I actually at Ernest Day, which is a festival where they watch the films in Tennessee. I'll leave the guy's name out of it, but I saw an actor talk about Jim Varney's performance, and he got choked up. And I realized, oh, and I've heard other people talk about that too. And I'm like, oh, it's not just me. It's not just this person. This is like an iconic performance. And so I wanted to tap into that. Like, I wanted to tap into the pathos as well as the zaniness. And so we have a story that is spooky, and it is zany, and it is good for Halloween, but there's also a touching character arc in the story that pushes Ernest along. And I'm excited about that, because it kind of takes Ernest in a new way. It taps into the pathos of Ernest Goes to the Camp, but it has the zany, fun, silliness, spookiness of Ernest Scared Stupid. So that's the theoretical backdrop to how I approach this story. But yeah, I mean, how people receive it, you never know. But taking a little bit of a risk, some people are going to be like, oh, that's not, but some people are going, hey, I like that, you know? You do the best you can, and you see where it lies at the end.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, because, you know, I still have not gotten my Ernest fill with all those things. And the thing that it's called Ernest and the Dreamstone.
Yes, sir.
I guess it looks like magic is involved, and it looks like we're going to see some of the characters that he did portray in there. Is that what's going to happen in the book?
Yes, sir. Very, very smart of you to point that out. So yeah, two things that an Ernest movie needs. When Disney worked with Ernest, you know, they told John Cherry, and John Cherry told me, you need heart and you need a little magic. That's kind of the Disney approach, right? Like you need heart, you need a little Disney magic. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a little magic in this. Let's just say that Ernest is in a town, and this town, a tragedy happens, and it's pushing this town to the brink of collapse. And for a number of reasons, it really matters to Ernest, and he doesn't want to see this happen. He stumbles upon a magical stone that brings his dreams into reality. And so he thinks, hey, I could just dream of the solution and fix all the problems. But of course, he's Ernest, and he's not going to dream of the thing that he wants to. And so instead, he dreams of the evil mad scientist, Dr. Otto. And we'll just leave it there and say chaos ensues. But so that's the premise. Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any idea about how much your Kickstarter is going to be aiming for?
Yeah, we're going to be aiming for about 35K. I think that's probably the bare minimum. And you know what? Like, man, I'm so nervous. I'm really passionate about this, and I really want this to make. And you would assume Earnest was such a big IP for a long time that, that's a shoo-in. But I really have no idea what's going to happen. So if anyone's listening out there, I actually don't enjoy being a salesman. I don't like selling stuff, but we need your help, guys. Like, nobody wants to see this in their lap more than me. And I know there's a lot of Earnest fans that also really care about seeing Earnest again. And Wayne just said the same thing. So we need your help. We launched on the 17th, and I'm sure a lot of people know this, but Kickstarter's algorithm rewards those projects that have people purchase on the first day. And it kind of punishes those who don't. So as many people that can get out on September 17th and September 18th, make a purchase, you'll be helping us out. And that's the goal.
Now, if people want more information, there's ErnestGoesToComics.com. And there's also on Facebook, there's an Earnest Goes to Comics page. There's an Earnest P. Worrell official page. Mm-hmm. I never knew this was out there. So this was the greatest thing, was to find all these things. there's a page. Which Jim Varney best describes your mood today? And there's like 16 pictures of the different faces that he could do.
Yeah.
Even just looking at it makes me laugh, because see, this is... You know, he was a good dramatic actor, and to be able to do all those facial expressions and very different from one another. He was a wonderful actor. I still grieve over the loss of him, but I think that this book could really do that. It could scratch an itch that a lot of us have had for a couple decades, and we like to have that happen. I like a lot more of that, to be honest. So I really want people to support this and get out there and do this. And there is so much wonderful stuff. If you ever get a chance to watch an Earnest movie, I think you're going to be bowled over by how good it is and how smartly it's put together. So, I'm sure that this comic is going to be very much the same. I'm sure you're going to borrow a lot from those great movies and the good things that we got before. So, I'm hoping for big successes here. Actually, someday, you know what I'd love? I'd love to see this get turned into an animated movie.
Well, you and I both, my friend, you and I both. But you know, I'll leave that there. But, I will say this, there's always negative haters out there, and, it'll never be the same as it was in the films. You know, it won't be the same because it's not a film, and Jim Varney's not here, but you can be rest assured that we tried hard and we worked hard to make it as authentic and as earnesty as possible, so that you could project those feelings and thoughts and vocal rhythms and stuff on the page, so that it would feel as authentic as possible as a comic release in 2024 possibly could. So,
well, the only thing I found to be true about Earnest is that it reminds me, his whole experience reminds me very much of a song that came out around that time called Total Eclipse of the Heart.
Okay.
People either loved it or they hated it. There was no middle ground. And I find without Earnest, there's people who are extremely passionate about it, or the people who just, I hate that. But the thing of it is I think there's enough of us who are passionate about that. I think this could be a big success, and it could lead to even more good stuff like this. Because honestly, I could use some more childlike experience and lots of fun and enjoyment in an era which is so dark and so awful on many levels, that to have something that would make us smile, I think we could use a lot more of.
Yes.
So I'm hoping for a lot of success, Corey. I'm hoping this does really well, and man, good things coming. This is only the beginning of this wonderful experience. So much success with it.
Yeah. Thanks for everything. Yeah. Thanks for saying that. And just if I could add at the end, that's what you just said touched on something I actually personally feel really passionate about, which is, it is kind of a dark time. You turn on the TV and everybody's yelling and everybody's upset, and And I also think that we are in an era where we have so many anti-heroes, which are cool. Actually, I love I love Batman. You know, like I love a cool, dark hero. But I do think that there's room for a hero who's just caring and kind, and he struggles to do the right thing, and he makes mistakes. And you know, I think the proof in the pudding of that is Ted Lasso, which was a show that came out on the Apple app or the whatever you call it.
And Apple TV.
Apple TV. And I mean, it was immensely popular. You know what? It was just a good guy against cynical forces, and he was using kindness to win the day. And, you know, Ernest is maybe more bombastic than Ted Lasso, but, you know, there's a lot of Ernest in Ted Lasso, I believe. And they're analogs, kind of. And so I agree with you. I think there's room, and I think there's probably a lot of people who would like to have some uplifting, you know, earnesty fun. And so, I'm hoping that we find those people as well.
Me too. So much success.
Thank you, sir.
Examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support this show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance. And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.